Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, but the first hour I'm spending with Del Stecher. Now, I'll share them if you want. So 888-876-5593 if you want to get in on this. Otherwise, sit back and listen because you are about to learn things that you never knew existed. Yeah, I've got a few of them in mind. Del Stecher, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
I'm delighted, and I loved Colored Pebbles, which is the latest and greatest, and I put a link on Raleigh.net. I found it on Amazon, so it is now available to the general public, and that is terrific. I haven't counted, but I would assume there's probably at least 36 different characters in this.
Well, I think I lost count. You know, it took 75 years in the making.
Yes, exactly. And there are so many things I want to ask you, but one of the shortest, absolutely one of the shortest, is also, as you term it, the darkest pebble. So I hate to give this away because I hope people will go out and buy this. However, we're talking here about Ted Bundy. But tell me about your reaction to meeting him.
Well, it was just unplanned. It happened as it turned out, in the height of the time when he was killing people. Oh. But no one knew at the time. I was going to graduate school at the University of Puget Sound, and his mother was a secretary in the graduate department. And I was there getting ready to talk to one of my professors. The secretary introduced this lady, and then right then her son walked in and she introduced me to her son, and I shook hands with him. He was very pleasant and personable, as we later found out that was part of his modus operandi. But when I looked at him, he scared the death out of me. His eyes were just the most evil thing, and it just affected me. And I went home that afternoon and I got very drunk. So that's what happened.
What did you think when you found out about his nefarious deeds?
I felt like I had dodged the bullet, even though he didn't go after males. You know, my path in life had crossed his, even for that brief moment. But immediately, when it came up who and what he was, and I recalled that meeting, immediately, even today, I go back to looking down into his eyes. He's very, very evil, dark. So it affected me. And you say, it's, you know, with all my colored pebbles, all the good things in my life, and all these wonderful people I wanted to thank for making me who I am, he's the one and only dark pebble that I wrote about. It happened over 50 years ago, and it scared the heck out of me that day. And it still troubles me when I think about it.
You know, it's interesting because there's almost a subtext here where I would think at the time when you found out exactly who he was, there was a certain amount of vindication for your gut feelings. One of those I knew it feelings. You had to have had that to a degree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Up until that time, you know, that occurrence that day, it was, you know, you kind of push it off. You know, you met somebody really terrible, it affected you, you know, I had a bad afternoon and evening, hangover the next day, and then I put it out of my mind. And then a couple years later, because his real killing spree was from 74 to 78. And I think his name came up somewhere around 78, 79, and right in there. And then, I felt vindicated in a strange, weird way.
Yeah, I would think also that it's probably not an isolated example in terms of you having, I won't say premonitions, but maybe just feelings that are not necessarily quantifiable or verifiable about all sorts of things. And I think that sort of runs through your book, not anywhere near like The Darkest Pebble here, but nonetheless, you have a certain amount of, how shall we say, psychic ability. Did you know that?
If I'd characterize it, going back, I have a great memory, and I explained in the book, as a kid, I read encyclopedias. I've got a decent IQ. I love trivia. And I'm what I would recall myself. I'd call myself an is-be kind of person. I like being in the moment. I like observing what I'm in. And I think that gives me a heightened awareness. I don't know if it's any kind of a psychic ability or anything. Maybe it's just a natural talent. But I'm really focused, and I remember who I met, you know, the people that affect me. And there are times when I'm in a moment and I'm kind of step outside of myself and I realize that I'm in it and I'm also observing it. So,
well,
and that's why... That's why I think I wrote what I wrote.
And I can understand. It is just great. And there are so many people I want to ask about. But, of course, you know I'm going to focus on the Birdman of Chicago because I got a lot of questions here. So we're talking to Del Stecher. The book is Colored Pebbles, and it is available right now all over the place, including at Amazon. There's a link at Rolly.net, Rolly.net. So pick it up. And if you want to join us, by all means, 8888-ROLLYE. All right. But before we get back to it, I want to mention the CC Radio 3. Love talking about the Sea Crane Company, because their radios are just better. And when I say that, it was many years ago that Bob Crane was as disgusted as some of us were with the lousy reception that radios that were being made in the 80s and things like that just had the 80s and 90s. I mean, you know, they'd have all these bells and whistles, but then you couldn't pick up anything. And he said, I can do better. And boy, did he. The one commonality that everything in the Sea Crane catalog has is it has just terrific AM and FM reception. And that's really true about the CC Radio 3, the almost everything radio. I say that because it has the addition of Bluetooth, and the speaker is so nice that John actually uses it as a Bluetooth speaker. So you can use it for that purpose alone. It's also got the 2-meter ham band, so that may give you information in emergency you're not hearing anywhere else, certainly not on your smartphone. But even day-to-day, fun to hear the hams jawing back and forth. But, and of course, I should say, all the bells and whistles, you know, the clock and the alarm and the presets and the timer and the weather band and the weather alert, of course. But if you are frustrated by what you're not picking up well on any other radio, the CC Radio 3 will leave it in the dust. Go to ccradio.com, look at the CC Radio 3. If you can't do that, you can call them. Great customer service, 800-522-8863. 800-522-2, and they'll answer all your questions, and you can order by phone. But if you can go online, not only great products, but great information about radio as well. It's a real repository, ccradio.com. You look at the CC Radio 3. I think you're going to like it. You tell them Rolly sent you from WGN Radio.
Hand to hold on to. Everyone needs a hand to hold on to.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You know, often I'll ask, well, what inspired you to request that song? But I think I know. Johnny Cougar in 1982 on Riva, A Hand to Hold On To. And we're talking to Del Sticker, who has written a number of things, but Colored Pebbles is the latest. And yeah, good choice, because I think it does really epitomize what you're saying in the book, Del. So I got to ask you, as we talk about the Birdman of Chicago, do you still have the miniature camel?
No, it was lost in a divorce.
Oh no! Yeah. No, I'm sure you fought hard for it.
That was one of the most treasured things I had, because it was given to me when I was about 7 years old, and it was cut out of a palm tree that was over 2,000 years old, and. My uncle Erling, the Birdman, got the camel from his Aunt Esther, who was also mentioned in the book.
Yeah.
It's long gone.
Now, how could you have lost that? I can't imagine any court awarding that camel to anyone. This was your birthday gift as a child.
Well, I don't want to go back into the divorce, but my ex never gave me many things that belonged to me.
Oh.
And I've long since gotten over it.
Yeah. I can see that. You've got it in your memory forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, possessions really mean nothing to me right now. I have memories, you know, that's what the book is all about. You know, I've been blessed to be in great situations with many special people, and I describe a good number of them. And a lot of them are listening tonight. The ones that I want to give a shout out to, Vic and Frank and Harold and Gabby, my son Trad. I do believe that the Zulu phrase that I am because we are, that's what I wanted to tell people in this book, because it took 75 years of living. As we talked the last time I was on the show, I was commanded to tend to my writing, and this is the writing that I tended to. So it's my life laid out for people, and I hope that people enjoy it.
Oh, I'm sure they will, because it's compelling on so many levels. So I mentioned the camel, of course, and this is in the same chapter with a King Tut's totem. So you got to tell me about that.
Well, out of the blue, my Uncle Erling, the Birdman, he calls me, and he just goes into conversation about his problems and things, and he brings up that he's being followed by the representatives from the Egyptian government, federal agents, and it's about a totem that his aunt, you know, Aunt Esther, got it from Lord Carnarvon and, the archaeologist Carter, you know, when they opened King Tut's tomb. There were all these little things that were down there, little totems, and the thing was about maybe 13 inches high. And he misplaced it. And, you know, he was getting on in years, and he called me and wanted to know, did I have a hiding place in his apartment and studio? And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't fathom what he was talking about. And it was a totem from King Tut's tomb, which he had all his time in his life. And I understood when he died, no one found it. So it could be hidden in the building or lost. I don't know. But it's never shown up.
And that's fascinating because, of course, there are so many stories about anybody who had any interaction with anything from King Tut or his tomb. All manner of hell descended on them. So while the State Department might have been following him and the entire Egyptian government, seems like he came out unscathed.
Yeah. He was such a marvelous character. You know, Old Town in the 50s and 60s in Chicago was the Greenwich Village of the Midwest. And it was just a great place to be, and there was just no way to describe being around him in and out of his shop, and it was just magic. And for him to be my godfather and uncle, and all through my life, somebody who would just come in and out, and he was also, when I was growing up, a refuge. I could get on the train, go downtown, and hop a bus, and go hang with him for a little bit. And the funny thing is, I never really liked birds. He's famous ornithologist, and birds opened so much into his life and all, and he was wonderful for me and all. But I just never really got into you know, all the bird things. It was him that I really cared about.
So. Understandable, but some of these birds, my God, that $20,000 macaw, you're talking about serious birds here.
Oh, yeah, and he was famous for being able to take exotic birds and have them mate and reproduce in captivity. He was one of the first to do that. And he was all self-taught. You know, he was not educated in any way formally to be an ornithologist, but he became well-known throughout the world as an expert on exotic birds. And he had very many international people would fly to Chicago to come to his shop. And I remember one in particular was Tallulah Bankhead, the actress. She came in the 50s and you know, people like that would come in and, you know, they back then and, you know, dropping $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on a bird. And also that he loved to do the handmade cages.
I can't even imagine. So, and he's mating them right there on North Sedgwick in Old Town, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Normally wouldn't expect that. But what's there today at 1728 North Sedgwick?
There's some kind of an office building now. Sometime about 10 years ago, I tried to get in touch with the owners, and I think I sent them when I wrote another South Side, the book.
Yeah.
I used 1728 North Sedgwick as an address, and it's written into one of the stories. And I think I sent them a copy, and I just mentioned it to them. But you can Google it and see from the street. I think it's some kind of a business is there now.
They have no idea about the ground they're standing on, I am sure. And you will when you read Colored Pebbles. It is a wonderful book and just one of many. We have Del on every time he writes a new book, and I hope there's another one coming soon. We'll talk about that. But in the meantime, this is just out. So Colored Pebbles, you can go to Amazon or anywhere else and pick up a copy. If you got any questions or comments, absolutely, I won't hog Del. But if you don't, well, yes, I will. So we'll pick it up after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Up this morning, you were on my mind, and you were on my mind. I got troubles, oh, I got worries, oh, I got wounds to bind. So I went to the corner just to ease my pain.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. The Wee Five, You Were On My Mind, A&M, 1965. Height of the British invasion. A lot of people thought that was true for the Wee Five, too, and it wasn't. They were an American folk rock group. They were actually from the Bay Area. And You Were On My Mind was originally done by Ian and Sylvia. Didn't hit. And so here come Wee Five. It becomes their biggest hit, and you're saying, whatever happened to them? Well, they didn't last very long. I think they were together about 2 years. And then they come back occasionally and do a studio album. But it was Del Stecker's choice, and happy to play it. Now, as I mentioned, it was obvious to me why the Johnny Cougar choice, but Del, got to ask, what brought you to Wee Five?
Well, I just always liked that song, but the lyric, you know, it's You Were On My Mind, and all these people that I wrote about have been on my mind, and, you know, I get these thoughts, they come in, they go out, and it just happened I sat down and wrote about each one of them, and truly, they're on my mind, and I don't know. It's just a great song, too. It's a happy song in a way. So,
well, you bring every...
And,
every one of these characters to life, even the ones we've never heard of. We feel like they're friends after we read your accounts. And of course, the ones we have heard of, some might surprise us, and others, well, I'm not at all surprised. For instance, Eddie Arnold calling your mother sounds like something he would do. So tell me about that.
Well, you know, it was part of my job to meet with him because I was working on the Country Music Hall of Fame. And, of course, he was a member at the time, and he was known as a crusty old guy, and tight with his money. And I went down to see him, and as I tell him the story, it didn't go well at first. I just, you know, my ability to see articles in someone's office, bring up conversation, and, you know, make that connection, it just didn't work. And just when I was leaving, I happened to see the picture of his boat on the wall, and I remembered that he was a friend of a boater, another person that I wrote about, Frank Swigert. And I said, oh, gee, before I leave, I got to mention that Frank says hello. And next thing I know, Eddie Arnold became like a whole different human being. And later on, I found out from many people that he was very warm and wonderful and personal and such a good friend to people and bent over backwards for people and all. But spending time with him, and then in the end, you know, we spent the whole day. We have lunch. He agrees to give a whole bunch of money to the Hall of Fame. And then, again, just by leaving, he picks up the phone and says, what's your mother's phone number? You know, because in the conversation, I mentioned that she was a big fan. And the next thing you know, he's on the phone with her, and I'm ushered out. Like you said, the story goes on. And he and my mom were good friends for a while, trading notes and on the phone and everything.
That's great.
And that's, yeah. Today a lot of people don't remember him, but, you know, back in the 60s and early 70s, he was, you know, as big as he could be in entertainment, you know. And I remember being a kid watching him on Ed Sullivan and all his shows and everything. And then to be there with him and meet him and talk to him, that was wonderful. But then how the human side of them came out. And that's what I wanted to do with each one of these people. Some of them are famous. Some of them are just people in my life that are so meaningful, you know.
Yeah, it's a great, great story. And everything I knew about him, I remember talking to him once after he'd been on the charts for something like six different decades. And, you know, I said, what do you attribute it to? He said, I treat it like a business. I come into my office every day. I answer my mail. I pay my bills. And it is my business. And I thought that was very well put, to say the least. And it was kind of the epitome. He was just a nice guy all the way around. And I'm glad that it worked out, because I'm not surprised that he donated. Now, another deal, you know, you mentioned him on the phone with your mom, who I know initially didn't believe it was him, right? Says, is this really?
Yeah,
but worked out well. But another call, which is fascinating, because I also want to get to what precipitated it, but tell me about Ross Perot.
Oh, golly, that was, you know, that was just wonderful, because when I wrote the book, the World War II history book, which was about my dad's time, 5 years in the Navy on this very fantastic ship, I wrote the book and got some good notice on it and things. And I remembered I had interviewed, when I was getting out of the Army, Ross Perot's company interviewed a lot of junior officers for jobs. And I was offered a job, and I turned it down, and I did something else. And then later on in life, I was interviewing for a job in fundraising for the medical center, and he was on the search committee, and I was the dark horse candidate, but they determined I was too young at the time, but so I didn't get the job. So when I wrote the book, and knowing that he was a big military supporter, a Navy man, I just sent him a copy of the book and said, you know, I almost worked for you twice, but, you know, I just thought you might like this book. And then out of the blue, his secretary arranged to fool me with my wife setting me up. And I just answered the phone, and it's him. You know, it was no prep, no call, no nothing. And, you know, there I am. I'm talking to Ross Perot. And he had that very distinctive, high-pitched kind of voice. But it was so funny, because he said, you know, this is Ross Perot. And he spells his name, you know, E-E-R-O. you know, and I'm like, of course I know who you are, you know, Mr. Perot, Mr. Perot. And he's telling me, no, it's not Mr. Perot, it's Ross, R-O-S-S, Ross, you know, Dell, you know. And we chatted on the phone. It was really great. And he, we're talking about the book, and he was just, you know, giving his personal time to me just because I sent him a book. And I've done this. I've gotten notes back from people or things and saying, oh, thanks for the book or whatever. Or I've sent it and you never hear anything from anybody. But it was really, really good. So we're talking on the phone, and then in the end, he wraps it up and says, yeah, is there anything I can do for you? You know. It's the way you can buy a couple hundred books and, you know, and give, and he goes, yeah, it's really funny. It was just so good, you know. And later on, I there was a follow-up book that was related to it, and I sent him that, too, with another letter. And he didn't call me. He wrote me a very nice personal note. And it was just, you know, out of the blue. And here's a guy that, you know, back in the 90s, he could have been president. He sure changed the world.
Yeah.
But he was so personal, and to take out time for that, he was, again, just like Eddie Arnold, a real human being. I was looking at, who am I? This great man calls me and spends the time, and it wasn't one of those in and out phone calls. He actually shared time with me on the phone and conversed, and you know, he could have just said thanks a lot, you know, moved on and blown me off, but it was really an experience. It always affected me. So
it was great. Absolutely great.
As I explained, some of these people in the book are they've been with me a long time, affected me, and others are kind of like hit and miss, a one-off kind of experience, but they really stayed with me. You know, they were on my mind, like the song said.
Right. Right, absolutely. All right, I've got a zillion other questions, but I promised I wouldn't hog you. So we are going to talk to Marty and to Cleveland Dennis, if I can actually do this here. we shall see. All right, so conferencing is not necessarily my forte, but let's see what Marty in Whiting. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Good evening, Raleigh.
So tell me, talk to Dell. I'm not the hit here. He is.
Dell, I got a quick question. I'm a huge sports fan, particularly baseball, but any story from the book about meeting a professional athlete, particularly baseball?
No baseball, but there's one in there, Bill Wade, the football player from the Chicago Bears.
Oh, wow.
I was asked to meet with this guy, and they just mentioned his name, William Wade. He's looking for a job. And as I recounted the story, the bank changes and mergers and everything. After he left football, he was worked at a bank in Nashville, and he lost his job. He was in his late 50s, around 60, and all of a sudden he's sitting in front of me, and then I realize all of a sudden, wait a second, this is Bill Wade. Football player, you know, won the NFL championship and with 61 with the Bears and all this. And he told me a fantastic story about how he lost the opportunity to be the successor to Papa Bear, the George Halas. And because he did not understand. Yeah, he did. It's a great story because it's so sad.
It is.
And I'm not going to spoil it. I mean, get the book and read it. It's a great sports story.
It's worth it alone, and it'll literally make you cry. And talk about a missed opportunity. Oh, my dear God.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to buy it.
All right. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So let's see what is on Cleveland Dennis's mind. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
I find the conversation quite interesting because every time, or the longer I listen, even though I missed a portion when I was on the phone with John calling in, I have comments to make and then a question or two. But Bill Wade, I still have some of his football cards.
You'll want to read this story.
Anyhow. And I will. Yeah, and Papa Bear, he was just mentioned recently because the Eastland sunk. In the Chicago River, Papa Bear was supposed to be on that Eastern River. I think it was electronic company in Chicago having a picnic. And when he, for whatever reason, didn't make it to the boat, kind of saved his life, because all those people that died during that tragedy. Anyhow, You Were On My Mind was mentioned by your guest that it's a happy song. I know that song. It's a drug-related song.
Well, when Ian and Sylvia, no shock there.
Right. But when I get to the corner to ease my mind, all right? Now, I didn't know that when it was a hit in the 60s, and I have a 45 of that one for sure, and maybe on one of the albums, but I learned later that that's what they were talking about. I'm pretty sure.
But, you know, the beautiful thing about music is it can be anything you want it to be. The heck with finding out for sure what Ian or Sylvia was thinking about.
Well, I don't know what they're thinking about. I'm just saying what I heard.
Yeah, it's a heroin song, actually. I'm well aware of it.
Right. Okay. That's why, we know all about that too well in my family. But when you're talking about Ted Bundy, I knew the story pretty well over the years from different episodes of True Crime Garage. But what was the deal with his dad? Did he have a dad? Was it a stepdad? I just can't remember, and I just would like to bring that up.
That's interesting. I know Louise was his mother, and you knew her. Was there a father in the picture you knew about, Del?
He was adopted by her second husband.
Okay.
And he originally was not born Bundy. He had a different name, so he assumed his stepfather's name.
Okay, but the stepfather was there through his growing up and all that. It wasn't a single parent household.
No, I don't know all those details, but I'm sure somebody's really analyzed his.
Oh yeah, I'm positive of that. Yeah. All right, Dennis, thank you for calling. It's always good to hear from you. All right, so we will, now there's, we talk about missed opportunities as well, not only Mr. Wade, but you almost missed one, and I want to pick that up next, how many times you turned down the story of J.P. Nunnally. So it's all in Colored Pebbles, and that is available to you, and you will like it. Now, what I love about it is that it is... like I say, probably 36 or more stories that are woven together. But if you're saying, I don't have time to read a book, this is the kind of thing where you can read a story, put it down, and then pick it up with the next story whenever you want to. And it makes it a pleasure to read. I just loved every word. So 888-876-5593 if you want the last word, but I have a feeling I'm going to hog. Del, coming up on WGN Radio.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name, I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I've got a name, I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did, but I'm living the dream that he kept here. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead so life won't pass me by. Like a north wind whistling down the sky, I've got a song, I've got a song. Like the whippoorwill and the baby's cry, I've got a song, I've got a song. And I carry it with me and I sing it loud. If it gets me nowhere, I go there proud. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead so life won't.
WGN. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that was Del Stecker's third request. Jim Croce, I Got a Name, released one day after he died in a plane crash. He died September 20th, 1973, and on the 21st, that record dropped. And they're planning to, obviously, release it anyway, and it became a top 10 hit, as you can obviously tell. So I'm going to run out of time here, and I got one story I got to get to, because, Del, I absolutely understand why you would turn down anything that was submitted to you for all the reasons we know. And here comes a guy who is unrelenting in saying, you got to read my father's notes. You just got to read his letters. And eventually you succumbed. And that was an interesting reason as to why. But tell me about J.P. Nunnally.
Harold, his son, read the book about my dad on a ship. And somebody told him, you know, here's this book about your dad's ship, too. And his father was on the ship. He was not one of the original plankholders, but he was there for a good part of their service in the war. And Harold had these heartrending letters, and he said, you got to read them. And I just blew them off. I said, no, I don't want to. I was advised by Pat Conroy, the writer, don't use other people's material. You're going to get in trouble and all that.
Right.
And I kept on saying no and no and no. And finally, I said, okay, I'll read a couple of them just to get them off my back. And he sent me a couple. I read them, and I called him back, and I said, if you got any more, I want them. They're wonderful. And it's the most heartrending story. And it's I don't believe in channeling, but if I was ever channeled or involved in it, when I wrote the book about JP's experience called Sailor Man, I had to read those letters backwards, forwards, up and down. They're heartrending. It's the most wonderful anti-war book, I think. I've had a lot of people compliment me telling JP's story, but I really, you know, it got the gold medal for memoirs from the Military Writers Society of America. And when the gold medal, like this.
Yeah, this is wonderful. And I hate to do this. People are going to have to read Sailor Man, but Colored Pebbles as well. We've just blown through an hour. So I hope we can do it again, Del.
Anytime.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, I could talk for the next 2 hours. And Colored Pebbles, absolutely worth the read. True about Sailor Man, too. It's all on Raleigh.net. You can get the links, and we'll pick it up right there. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine right here on WGN Radio.